Chapter 2, Ownership, Interests and Encumbrances. Forms of Real Estate Ownership. Although the forms of ownership available are controlled by state laws, a fee simple estate may be held in three basic ways. 1. In severalty, where title is held by one individual. 2. In co-ownership, where title is held by two or more individuals. 3. In trust, where a third individual holds title for the benefit of another. Ownership in severalty. Ownership in severalty occurs when property is owned by one individual or corporation. The term comes from the fact that this sole owner is severed or cut off from other owners. The severalty owner has sole rights to the ownership and sole discretion to sell, will, or lease, or otherwise transfer part or all of the ownership rights to another person. Sole ownership of property is quite common in Illinois, and title held in severalty presents no unique legal problems. However, when either a husband or wife owns property in severalty, lenders, grantees, and title insurers in Illinois usually require that the non-owning spouse sign in order to release any potential homestead rights. This is true for both listing and sales contracts. A non-owning spouse who is a minor will also have to sign. Co-ownership, when title to one parcel of real estate is held by two or more individuals, those parties are called co-owners or concurrent owners. Undivided interest in co-ownership, the physical property, however, is not divided into a specific half or third. Hence, it is called an undivided fractional interest. The co-owners have unity of possession, meaning they are entitled to possession of the whole property. It is the ownership interest, not the property, that is divided. Three different owners cannot own a floor each in the three-floor flat they own. Tenant in common. A parcel of real estate may be owned by two or more people as tenants in common. In a tenancy in common, each tenant holds an undivided fractional interest in the property. A tenant in common may hold, for example, a one-half or one-third interest in a property. Some features of tenant in common. If no fractions are stated, the tenants are presumed to hold equal shares. For example, if five people hold title, each would own an undivided one-fifth interest. Because the co-owners own separate interests, they can sell, convey, mortgage, or transfer their individual interests without the consent of the other co-owners. No individual tenant may transfer the ownership of the entire property. When one co-owner dies, the tenant's undivided interest passes according to the co-owner's will, heirs, or living trust. In Illinois, tenant in common can be conveyed by a single deed, which may show the proportional interests of each tenant in common. When a single deed is used, lack of a description of each tenant's share means all tenants hold equal, undivided shares. In Illinois, tenant in common can be conveyed by a separate deed issued to each tenant in common, which shows his or her, or their individual proportional interest. In Illinois, the law presumes that two or more owners hold title as tenants in common if the deed does not state specifically how title is to be held. Joint tenancy. The unique feature of joint tenancy is unity of ownership and can be described as a special bond between the owners. Each tenant holds an undivided fractional interest in the property. In joint tenancy, all shares must be equal. Right of survivorship. Joint tenancy. Some features of the right of survivorship. 1. Ownership in joint tenancy cannot pass to their heirs on the death of the joint tenant. 2. Upon the death of a joint tenant, the deceased's interest transfers directly to the surviving joint tenant. Essentially, there is one less owner. 3. A will has no effect on a deceased joint tenant's property. 4. With each successive joint tenant death, the surviving joint tenants keep acquiring the deceased tenant's interest. 5. The joint tenancy continues until only one owner remains. 6. The last survivor takes title in severalty and has all the rights of sole ownership, including the right to pass the property to any heirs creating joint tenancies. A joint tenancy can be created only by the intentional act of conveying a deed or giving the property by will. It cannot be implied or created by operation of law. The deed must specifically state the party's intention to create a joint tenancy. The parties must be explicitly identified as joint tenants. 4. Unities are required to create a joint tenancy. 1. A unity of possession. All joint tenants holding an undivided right to possession. 2. Unity of interest. All joint tenants holding equal ownership interests. 3. Unity of time. All joint tenants acquiring their interests at the same time. 4. Unity of title. All joint tenants acquiring their interests by the same document. The four requirements for unities include the following. 1. Title is acquired by one deed. 2. The deed is executed and delivered at one time. 3. The deed conveys equal interests to all of the parties. 4. The parties hold undivided possession of the property as joint tenants. Illinois allows a sole owner to execute a deed to herself and others as joint tenants and not as tenants in common, in order to create a valid joint tenancy. Tenancy by the entirety. Special joint tenancy for married couples. Illinois allows husbands and wives to use a special form of co-ownership called tenancy by the entirety for their personal residence. 1. Tenancy by the entirety is recognized in Illinois too. In this form of ownership, each spouse has an equal, undivided interest in the property. 3. A husband and wife who are tenants by the entirety have rights of survivorship. 4. During their lives, they can convey title only by a deed signed by both parties. 5. One party cannot convey a one-half interest. 6. They have no right to partition or divide. 7. A lawsuit against one of the spouses will not put a lien on the house. 8. A married couple owning property by the entirety would be eligible for homestead protection in the event of a judgment against either the husband or wife. 9. On the death of one spouse, the survivor automatically becomes the sole owner. 10. The surviving spouse enjoys the benefits of ownership without the delay of probate proceedings. To create a tenancy by the entirety, the deed must indicate that the property is to be owned, not as joint tenants or tenants in common, but as tenants by the entirety. The Illinois Religious Freedom Protection and Civil Union Act was signed into law on January 31, 2011. The Act's purpose is to provide persons entering into a civil union with the obligations, responsibilities, protections, and benefits as are afforded or recognized by the law of Illinois to spouses. Civil union partners will be able to hold title to real property as tenants by the entirety after the Act's effective date of June 1, 2011. Termination of tenancy by the entirety's A tenancy by the entirety may be terminated in several ways. 1. By a court-ordered sale of the property to satisfy a judgment against the husband and wife as joint debtors. 2. By the death of either spouse. 3. By agreement between both parties. 4. By divorce. Termination of co-ownership by partition suit. Partition is a legal way to dissolve the relationship when the parties do not voluntarily agree to its termination. 1. Co-tenants who wish to terminate their co-ownership may file an action in court to partition the property. 2. If the court determines that the land cannot be divided physically into separate parcels without destroying its value, the court will order the real estate sold. 3. The proceeds of the sale will then be divided among the co-owners according to their fractional interests. Community property laws are based on the idea that a husband and wife, rather than merging into one entity, are equal partners in the marriage. Under community property laws, any property acquired during a marriage is considered to be obtained by mutual effort. Illinois, not a community property state. Illinois is a marital property state. Illinois has certain similarities to community property states, but with important differences. Illinois, too, breaks property down into two major categories based on marital status. Marital property: a husband and wife acquire joint rights in all property acquired after the date of marriage for the duration of the marriage, all of which will be divided between the two parties in the event of a divorce. Non-marital property: property that was acquired prior to the marriage or by gift or inheritance at any time, even during the marriage. If non-marital property is exchanged for other property, if it increases in value, or if it returns income, the exchange, increase, or income also would be considered non-marital property. If non-marital property is commingled with marital property, however, a presumption of transmutation is created. The resulting mixed property is presumed to be marital property. The spouses may execute an express contract agreeing to exclude certain property from being classified as marital property. Trusts. A trust is a device by which one person transfers ownership of property to someone else. Trustor owns the property. Trustee holds or manages the property for the benefit of a third party. The trustee is a fiduciary who acts in confidence or trust and has a special legal relationship with the beneficiary. The trustee's power and authority are limited by the terms of the trust agreement, will, or deed in trust. Illinois permits real estate to be held in trust as part of a living or testamentary trust or as the sole asset in a land trust, living and testamentary trusts a property owner may provide for her own financial care or for that of the owner's family by establishing a trust. This trust may be created by agreement during the property owner's lifetime or established by will after the owner's death. The person who creates the trust conveys real or personal property to a trustee, with the understanding that the trustee will assume certain duties. These duties may include the care and investment of the trust assets to produce an income. After paying the trust's operating expenses and trustee's fees, the income is paid to or used for the benefit of the beneficiary. The trust may continue for the beneficiary's lifetime, or the assets may be distributed when the beneficiary reaches a certain age or when other conditions are met. Land Trusts Illinois permits the creation of land trusts, in which real estate is the only asset. As in all trusts, the title to the property is conveyed to a trustee, and the beneficial interest belongs to the beneficiary. In the case of land trusts, however, the beneficiary usually is also the trustor. The beneficiary retains management and control of the real property and has the right of possession and the right to any income or proceeds from its sale. Beneficial interest, beneficiary. The beneficial interest is personal property. One of the distinguishing characteristics of a land trust is that public records usually do not name the beneficiary. A land trust may be used for secrecy when assembling separate parcels. There are other benefits as well. A beneficial interest in a land trust, being personal property, can be transferred by assignment, making the formalities of a deed unnecessary. The beneficial interest in property can be pledged as security for a loan without having a mortgage recorded. The beneficiary's interest passes at the beneficiary's death under the laws of the state in which the beneficiary lived. A land trust ordinarily continues for a definite term, such as 20 years. If the beneficiary does not extend the trust term when it expires, the trustee is usually obligated to sell the real estate and return the net proceeds to the beneficiary. Land trusts are used in Illinois. However, Illinois law requires that the trustee disclose the beneficiary's name to certain parties under specific circumstances. The beneficiary's name must be revealed to the concerned housing authority within 10 days after receiving a complaint of a violation of a building ordinance or law. When applying to any state of Illinois agency for a license or permit affecting the entrusted real estate. If selling the entrusted property by land contract. If the trustee is named as a defendant in a private lawsuit or criminal complaint regarding the subject real estate. If a fire inspector or another officer is investigating arson. Real Estate Investment Trust. Single taxation. A real estate investment trust does not have to pay corporate income tax, as long as 95% of its income is distributed to its shareholders. To qualify as a REIT, at least 75% of the trust's income must come from real estate. Investors purchase certificates in the trust, which in turn invests in real estate or mortgages. Profits are distributed to investors without being taxed at the REIT level. Ownership by business organizations. Partnerships. A partnership is an association of two or more persons who carry on a business for profit as co-owners. General partnership. All the partners participate in the operation and management of the business. Each general partner is solely responsible for the entire debt of the partnership. General partnerships are dissolved and must be reorganized if one partner dies, withdraws, or goes bankrupt. General partners manage the limited partnership. Assume all risk for debt. Contribute little capital. Take a minor share of the profits. Limited partnership organization consists of one or more general partners and a rather large number of limited partners. Limited partners. No management role in limited partnership. Liability limited to capital contribution. Contribute most of the capital. Take a major share of the profits. The limited partners are not legally permitted to participate in the management of the limited partnership. If they do, they are considered general partners and assume liability for all of the risk. The limited partnership is a popular method of organizing investors because it permits investors with small amounts of capital to participate in large real estate projects with a minimum of personal risk. Illinois has adopted the Federal Uniform Partnership Act, which permits real estate to be held in the partnership name. Profits and losses are passed through the partnership to each partner, whose individual tax situation determines the tax consequences. Corporations. A corporation is a legal entity created under the authority of the laws of the state from which it receives its charter. A corporation is managed and operated by its board of directors. The charter sets forth the powers of the corporation, including its right to buy and sell real estate. Because the corporation is a legal entity, it can own real estate in severalty or as a tenant in common. It cannot hold property in a life estate because a corporation can exist indefinitely. Some corporations are permitted by their charters to purchase real estate for any purpose, and others are limited to purchasing only the land necessary to fulfill the entity's corporate purposes. The creation and regulation of corporations in Illinois are governed by the Illinois Business Corporation Act. As a legal entity, a corporation continues to exist until it is formally dissolved. The death of one of the officers or directors does not affect title to property owned by the corporation. One of the main disadvantages of corporate ownership of income property is that the profits are subject to double taxation. As a legal entity, a corporation must file an income tax return and pay tax on its profits. The portion of the remaining profits distributed to shareholders as dividends are taxed again, as part of the shareholders' individual incomes. Subchapter S. Corporation. Single taxation. An alternative form of business ownership that provides the benefit of a corporation as a legal entity but avoids double taxation is known as an S-corporation. Only the shares of the profits that are passed to the shareholders are taxed. The profits of the S-corporation are not taxed. Though there is no limitation on the amount of corporate income for an S-corporation, the shareholders are limited to 100. Limited liability companies. Single taxation. The limited liability company combines the most attractive features of limited partnerships and corporations. The members of an LLC enjoy the limited liability offered by a corporate form of ownership and the tax advantages of a partnership. In addition, the LLC offers flexible management structures without the complicated requirements of S corporations or the restrictions of limited partnerships. With passage of the Illinois Limited Liability Company Act in 1994, Illinois joined the majority of states that recognize limited liability companies as legitimate business organizations. Syndicates and joint ventures. Generally speaking, a syndicate is two or more people or firms joined together to make and operate a real estate investment. A syndicate is not in itself a legal entity, however, it may be organized into a number of ownership forms, including co-ownership, partnership, trust, or corporation. A joint venture is a form of partnership in which two or more people or firms carry out a single business project. The joint venture is characterized by a time limitation resulting from the fact that the joint venturers do not intend to establish a permanent relationship. Estates in land. An estate in land defines the degree, quantity, nature, and extent of an owner's interest in real property. Many types of estates exist, but not all interests in real estate are estates. To be an estate in land, an interest must allow possession, meaning the holding and enjoyment of the property either now or in the future, and must be measured according to time. Historically, estates in land have been classified primarily by their length of time of possession. Freehold versus leasehold estates. Freehold estates last for an indeterminable length of time, such as for a lifetime or forever. They include fee simple, defeasible fee, and life estates. The first two of these estates continue for an indefinite period and may be passed along to the owner's heirs. A life estate is based on the lifetime of a person and ends when that individual dies. Leasehold estates last for a fixed period of time. They include estates for years and estates from period to period. Estates at will and estates at sufferance also are leaseholds, though, by their operation, they are not generally viewed as being for fixed terms. Freehold estates. Fee simple estate. Because fee simple estates are of unlimited duration, they are said to run forever. Upon the death of the owner, a fee simple passes to the owner's heirs or is provided by a will. A fee simple estate is also referred to as an estate of inheritance or simply as fee ownership. There are two major divisions of fee ownership: fee simple absolute and fee simple defeasible. Fee simple absolute is the highest interest in real estate recognized by law. Fee simple ownership is absolute ownership. The holder is entitled to all rights to the property. It is limited only by certain public and private restrictions, such as zoning laws and restrictive covenants. Fee simple defeasible estate is a qualified estate that is subject to the occurrence or non-occurrence of some specified event. Two categories of defeasible estates exist: 1. Those subject to a condition subsequent to. Those subject to a fee simple determinable. Condition subsequent, but if a fee simple estate may be qualified by a condition subsequent. This means that the new owner must not perform some action or activity. The former owner retains a right of re-entry so that if the condition is broken, the former owner can retake possession of the property through legal action. An owner grants some land to a buyer on the condition that there be no consumption of alcohol on the premises. This is a fee simple subject to a condition subsequent. If alcohol is consumed on the property, the former owner has the right to reacquire full ownership. It will be necessary for the grantor to go to court to assert that right. Determinable, as long as a fee simple determinable is a fee simple defeasible estate that may be inherited. This estate is qualified by a special limitation. The language used to distinguish a special limitation words such as so long as or while or during is the key to creating this special limitation. The former owner retains a possibility of reverter. If the limitation is violated, the former owner can reacquire full ownership with no need go the court. The deed is automatically returned to the former owner. The right of re-entry and possibility of reverter may never take effect. If they do, it will be only at some time in the future. Therefore, each of these rights is considered a future interest. Life estate. A life estate is a freehold estate limited in duration to the life of the owner, or the life of some other designated person or persons. Unlike other freehold estates, a life estate is not inheritable. It passes to future owners according to the prearranged provisions of the life estate. A life tenant is entitled to the rights of ownership and can benefit from both possession and ordinary use and profits arising from the ownership, just as if the individual were a fee simple. The life tenant's ownership may be sold, mortgaged, or leased, but it is always subject to the limitation of the life estate. The life tenant may not injure the property, such as by destroying a building or allowing it to deteriorate. In legal terms, such injury is known as waste. Those who eventually will own the property could seek an injunction against the life tenant or sue for damages if waste occurs. Because the ownership will terminate on the death of the person against whose life the estate is measured, a purchaser, lessee, or lender can be affected if the life tenant has sold his rights. Because the interest is less desirable than a fee simple estate, the life tenant's limited rights must be disclosed if the property is sold. The new purchaser will lose the property at whatever point in time the original life tenant would have lost it. Conventional life estate. A conventional life estate is created intentionally by the owner. It may be established either by deed at the time the ownership is transferred during the owner's life or by a provision of the owner's will, after the owner's death. The estate is conveyed to an individual who is called the life tenant. The life tenant has full enjoyment of the ownership for the duration of his life. When the life tenant dies, the estate ends, and its ownership passes, often as a fee simple, to another designated individual, or returns to the previous owner or owner's estate. Per otra vie, a life estate also may be based on the lifetime of a person other than the life tenant. This is known as a life estate per otra vie. Although a life estate is not considered an estate of inheritance, a life estate per otra vie provides for the life tenant's ownership only until the death of the person against whose life the estate is measured. Remainder interest. The creator of the life estate may name a remainder man as the person to whom the property will pass when the life estate ends. Reversionary interest. The creator of the life estate may choose not to name a remainder man. In that case, the creator or the creator's estate will recapture ownership when the life estate ends. The ownership is said to revert to the original owner. Legal life estate. A legal life estate is not created voluntarily by an owner. Rather, it is a form of life estate established by state law. It becomes effective automatically when certain events occur. Dower, courtesy, and homestead are the legal life estates currently used in many states. Dower and courtesy provide the non-owning spouse with a means of support after the death of the owning spouse. Dower is the life estate that a wife has in the real estate of her deceased husband. Courtesy is an identical interest that a husband has in the real estate of his deceased wife. Illinois has abolished the common law concepts of dower and courtesy in favor of the Uniform Probate Code. This gives the surviving spouse the right to take what is called an elective share on the death of the other spouse. Homestead right, unsecured creditors. A homestead is a legal life estate in real estate occupied as the family home. In effect, the home is protected from unsecured creditors during the occupant's lifetime. The homestead is not protected from real estate taxes levied against the property or from a mortgage for the purchase or cost of improvements. In other words, if the debt is secured by the property cannot be exempt from a judgment on that debt. The homestead merely reserves a certain amount of money for the family in the event of a court sale. On such a sale, 1. Any debts secured by the home, such as a mortgage, unpaid taxes, or mechanics liens, are paid from the proceeds first. 2. The family then receives the amount reserved by the homestead exemption. Finally, whatever amount remains from the sale proceeds is applied to the family's unsecured debts, such as credit card debts. Every homeowner in Illinois is entitled to a homestead estate up to a value of $15,000 for a single person and $30,000 for a married couple. The estate extends to all types of residential property, including condominiums and cooperatives. Single persons, as well as householders with spouses and families, qualify. No notice has to be recorded or filed to establish a homestead in Illinois. A family can have only one homestead at any one time. The Illinois homestead exemption is not applicable between co-owners. It is applicable to any co-tenant's unsecured creditors. The exemption continues after the death of an individual for the benefit of the surviving spouse as long as he continues to occupy the homestead residence. It also extends for the benefit of all children living there until the youngest reaches 18 years of age. A release, waiver, or conveyance of homestead is not valid unless it is expressed in writing and signed by the individual and his spouse, if applicable. The signatures of both spouses are always required on residential sales contracts, listing agreements, notes, mortgages, deeds, and other conveyances to release possible homestead rights, even if the property in question is owned solely by either the husband or the wife. No sale would be ordered if the court could determine that nothing would remain from the proceeds for the unsecured creditors. Limitations on the rights of ownership. Even the most complete ownership the law allows is limited by public and private restrictions. These restrictions are intended to ensure that one owner's use or enjoyment of her property does not interfere with others' use or enjoyment of their property or with the welfare of the general public. Governmental powers. Ownership rights are subject to certain powers or rights held by federal, state, and local governments. These limitations on the ownership of real estate are imposed for the general welfare of the community and, therefore, supersede the rights or interests of the individual. The state and local government powers discussed in this section are all held by the state of Illinois and various county and municipal governing bodies. Police power. Every state has the power to enact legislation to 1. Preserve order, 2. Protect public health and safety, 3. Promote the general welfare of its citizens. That authority is known as a state's police power. The state's authority is passed on to municipalities and counties through legislation called enabling acts. Eminent domain. Eminent domain is the right of the government to acquire privately owned real estate for public use. Condemnation is the process by which the government exercises this right, by judicial or administrative proceedings. Just compensation must be paid to the owner, and the rights of the property owner must be protected by due process of law. Ideally, the public agency and the owner of the property in question agree on compensation through direct negotiation, and the government purchases the property for a price considered fair by the owner. In some cases, the owner may simply dedicate the property to the government as a site for a school, park, or another beneficial use. In cases where the owner's consent cannot be obtained, the government agency can initiate condemnation proceedings to acquire the property. Quick take. Local units of government and quasi-governmental bodies are given the power of eminent domain by the Illinois Constitution and by the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure. In certain situations, Illinois law permits a summary proceeding in which a plaintiff condemner may obtain immediate fee simple title to real property, including the rights of possession and use. Such a proceeding in Illinois is termed a quick take. In quick take, the plaintiff must deposit a sum with the county treasurer that is preliminarily considered by the court to be just compensation, this can be litigated later. A quick take might be appropriate, for instance, when the state of Illinois or the Illinois Toll Highway Authority takes a property to construct, maintain, and operate highways, or an airport authority takes a property to provide additional land for an airport. Delegation of eminent domain power. Generally, states delegate their power of eminent domain to quasi-public bodies and publicly held companies responsible for various facets of public service. Supreme Court redefinition of eminent domain. In the past, the proposed use for taking property was to be for the public good. However, in June 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court in Kelo v. City of New London significantly changed the definition of public use. The court held that local governments could condemn homes and businesses for private or economic development purposes. Illinois law refining eminent domain. The Equity in Eminent Domain Act became effective in Illinois on January 1, 2007, following the Kelo v. New London Supreme Court case. The law places the obligation on the government to prove that an area is blighted before forcing property owners to sell their property for private development projects. In addition, the Act, 1, helps property owners receive fair market value for their property, 2, requires relocation costs for displaced residents and businesses, 3, pays attorneys' fees when property owners successfully sue to keep their property. Taxation is a charge on real estate to raise funds to meet the public needs of a government. Taxes on real estate include annual real estate taxes assessed by local and area governmental entities, including school districts, taxes on income realized by individuals and corporations on the sale of property, and special fees that may be levied for special projects. Non-payment of taxes will give the government the power to claim an interest in the property. Escheat is a process by which the state may acquire privately owned real or personal property. Illinois state law provides for ownership to transfer, or escheat, to the county in which the property is located, when an owner dies and leaves no heirs, and there is no will or living trust instrument that directs how the real estate is to be distributed. Encumbrances. An encumbrance is a claim, charge, or liability that attaches to real estate. An encumbrance does not have a possessory interest in real property. An encumbrance may decrease the value or obstruct the use of the property. An encumbrance is a right or an interest held by someone other than the property owner that affects title to the real estate, but does not necessarily prevent a transfer of title. Encumbrances may be divided into two classifications. Liens. Physical restrictions, easements, licenses, and encroachments. Liens. A lien is a charge against property that provides security for a debt or an obligation of the property owner. If the obligation is not repaid, the lien holder is entitled to have the debt satisfied from the proceeds of a court-ordered or forced sale of the debtor's property. Real estate taxes, mortgages and trust deeds, judgments, and mechanics liens all represent possible liens against an owner's real estate. Liens are discussed in depth in Chapter 5. Deed restrictions. Deed restrictions are private agreements that affect land use. Once placed in the deed by a previous owner, they run with the land, limiting the use of the property and binding to all grantees. Deed restrictions are enforced by an owner of real estate and are included in the seller's deed to the buyer. Covenants, conditions, and restrictions. These are private agreements that affect land use typically imposed by a developer or subdivider to maintain specific standards in a subdivision. CANDARs are listed in the original development plans for the subdivision filed in the public record. They may be enforced by the original owner, developer, or by a homeowners association. Easements. An easement is the right to use the land of another for a particular purpose. It may exist in any portion of the real estate, including the airspace above or a right-of-way across the land. An appurtenant easement is attached to the ownership of one parcel and allows the owner the use of a neighbor's land. For an appurtenant easement to exist, two adjacent parcels of land must be owned by two different parties. The parcel over which the easement runs is known as the servient tenement. The neighboring parcel that benefits is known as the dominant tenement. A party wall can be an exterior wall of a building that straddles the boundary line between two lots, or it can be a commonly shared partition wall between two connected properties. Each lot owner owns half of the wall on his lot, and each lot owner has an appurtenant easement in the other half of the wall. A written party wall agreement must be used to create the easement rights. Expenses to build and maintain the wall are usually shared. A fence built on the lot line is treated similarly. Easement in gross. An easement in gross is an individual or company's interest in or right to use someone else's land, without being appurtenant to that land, rights of way, or utility easements. 1. Commercial easements in gross may be assigned, conveyed, and inherited. 2. Personal easements in gross are usually not assignable. 3. Generally, a personal easement in gross terminates on the death of the easement owner. Creating an easement. An easement is commonly created by a written agreement between parties that establishes the easement right. It may be created by the grantor in a deed of conveyance, in which the grantor either reserves an easement over the sold land or grants the new owner an easement over the grantor's remaining land. Easement by necessity. An easement that is created when an owner sells a parcel of land that has no access to a street or public way, except over the seller's remaining land, is an easement by necessity. An easement by necessity is created by court order based on the principle that owners must have the right to enter and exit their land, the right of ingress and egress. They cannot be landlocked. Easement by prescription. If the claimant has made use of another's land for a certain period of time as defined by state law, an easement by prescription, or a prescriptive easement, may be acquired. The claimant's use must have been 1. Continuous, 2. Exclusive, 3. Without the owner's approval, 4. Visible, 5. Open, 6. Notorious, that is, the owner must have been able to learn of it. A visible fence, continuous gardening on the backlot, or driving over the property so often that ruts are visible are all examples. To establish an easement by prescription in Illinois, the use must be adverse, exclusive, under a claim of right, and continuous and uninterrupted for a period of 20 years. Illinois law permits owners of pedestrian walkways in shopping centers and large commercial or industrial buildings to prevent the establishment of prescriptive easements by the public. To block the establishment of a prescriptive easement, the owner of any property must, 1. Display signs, 2. Send a certified letter stating that access to or use of the property is by permission. The concept of tacking provides that successive periods of continuous occupation by different parties may be combined to reach the required total number of years necessary to establish a claim for a prescriptive easement. Easement by condemnation. An easement by condemnation is acquired for a public purpose through the right of eminent domain. The owner of the servient tenement must be compensated for any loss in property value. Terminating an easement. An easement terminates when the need no longer exists. When the owner of either the dominant or the servient tenement becomes the owner of both properties. By release of the right of easement to the owner of the servient tenement. By abandonment of the easement. By non-use of a prescriptive easement. By destruction of the servient tenement. By lawsuit. By property conversion. License. A license is a personal privilege to enter the land of another for a specific purpose. A license can be terminated or canceled by the licensor at any time. 1. If the use of another's property is given orally or informally, it generally is considered to be a license rather than a personal easement in gross. 2. A license ends on the death of either party or the sale of the land by the licensor. Encroachments. An encroachment occurs when all or part of a structure illegally extends beyond the land of its owner or beyond the legal building lines. An encroachment usually is disclosed by either a physical inspection of the property or a spot survey. Spot survey. A spot survey shows the location of all improvements located on a property and whether they extend over the lot or building lines onto an adjoining property, or an improvement on an adjoining property extends onto the property being surveyed. A spot survey is more informational and useful than a simple survey sketch with only the lot dimensions. If a spot survey and physical inspection show that a building encroaches on adjoining land, the neighbor may be able to either, 1. Recover damages, 2. Or secure removal of the portion of the building that encroaches. Unchallenged encroachments that last beyond a state's prescriptive period, however, may give rise to easements by prescription. Condominiums, cooperatives, townhouses, and timeshares. Condominium ownership. Two types of ownership in a condominium. 1. The owner of each unit holds a fee simple title to the airspace described by the 3D survey. 2. The individual unit owners also own a specified share of the undivided interest in the remainder of the building and land, known as the common elements, as tenant in common. Common elements include land, courtyards, lobbies, The exterior structure. Hallways. Elevators. Stairways. Roof. Recreational facilities. As such, each condominium owner has a fractional, undividable interest in the common elements, meaning the interest can be sold but not any actual part of the common elements. Illinois law provides, however, that unit owners do not have the same right to partition that other tenants in common have. Creation of a condominium in Illinois. The creation of condominiums is governed by the Illinois Condominium Property Act. Under this law, an owner-developer may elect to submit a parcel of real estate as a condominium situation by recording a declaration, to which is attached a three-dimensional plat of survey of the parcel showing the location and size of all units in the building. Every unit purchaser acquires the fee simple title to the unit purchased, together with the percentage of ownership of the common elements that are set forth in the declaration and that belongs to that unit. This percentage is computed on the basis of the initial list prices of each unit. 3D survey. The survey required with each declaration of condominium ownership must indicate the dimensions of each unit. This survey will show the outlines of the lot, the size and shape of each unit, and the elevation or height above base datum for the upper surface of the floor level and the lower surface of the ceiling level. The difference between these two levels represents the airspace owned in fee simple by the unit owner. Many Illinois municipalities have adopted conversion ordinances to protect tenants in rental buildings whose owners wish to convert to condominiums. The ordinances also protect prospective purchasers. These laws typically allow tenants an opportunity to extend their leases and often guarantee first purchase rights. Additional protections often include disclosure of all material information, the structural soundness of the building, adequacy of parking, and a variety of other concerns. These ordinances generally have been upheld by the courts as a valid exercise of police power. Ownership of a condominium. Once the property is established as a condominium, each unit becomes a separate parcel of real estate that is owned in fee simple and may be held by one or more persons in any type of ownership or tenancy recognized by state law. A condominium unit may be mortgaged like any other parcel of real estate. The unit can usually be sold or transferred to whomever the owner chooses unless the condominium association provides for a right of first refusal. In such a case, the owner is required to offer the unit at the same price to the other owners in the condominium or the association before accepting an outside purchase offer. Real estate taxes are assessed and collected on each unit as an individual property. Default in the payment of taxes or a mortgage loan by one unit owner may result in a foreclosure sale of that owner's unit. One owner's default, however, does not affect the other unit owners. Operation and administration of a condominium. The condominium property is administered by an association of unit owners, often called a homeowners association. The association may be governed by a board of directors or another official entity, and it may manage the property on its own or hire a property manager. The association must enforce any rules it adopts regarding the operation and use of the property. The association is responsible for the maintenance, repair, cleaning, and sanitation of the common elements and structural portions of the property. It also must maintain fire, extended coverage, and liability insurance. The expenses of maintaining and operating the building are paid by the unit owners in the form of fees and assessments. Both fees and assessments are imposed and collected by the owners' association. Recurring fees are paid by each unit owner. The fees often are due monthly, but the schedule may be quarterly, semi-annually, or annually, depending on the provisions of the bylaws. The size of an individual owner's fee is generally determined by the percentage of the unit's selling price in relation to the total of the selling price of all units when originally converted or built, but occasionally the percentage of square footage of the unit compared to the total square footage of all units in the condominium. If the fees are not paid, the association may seek a court-ordered judgment to have the delinquent owner's unit sold to cover the outstanding amount. Special assessments are special payments required of unit owners to address some specific expenses, such as a new roof. Assessments are structured in the same way as condo fees. Owners of larger units pay proportionately higher assessments. These general condominium guidelines apply under the Condominium Property Act in Illinois. However, the property may be removed from condominium status at any time by the unanimous consent of all owners and all lien holders, as evidenced by a recorded written instrument. All owners would then be tenants in common. Homeowners Association regulations. About 50 million U.S. homeowners belong to some sort of a homeowners association. The purpose of an HOA is to protect its members and property values. If a real estate agent has a property listed that has an HOA, the agent needs a copy of the rules and regulations from the homeowners and should pass it on to any potential buyer, since HOA rules and regulations vary between different HOAs. Some basic duties include collecting HOA dues, enforcing code violations, and determining changes to the covenants, conditions, and restrictions. A major benefit of an HOA is to protect property values as long as they are enforced by the association board. The CCR for an HOA are spelled out before you move in or purchase property. Everyone in an HOA must abide by the same code. Cooperative ownership. In a cooperative, a corporation holds title to the land and building. The corporation offers shares of stock to prospective tenants. The price the corporation sets for each apartment becomes the price of the stock. The purchaser becomes a shareholder in the corporation by virtue of this stock ownership and receives a proprietary lease to the apartment for the life of the corporation. Because stock is personal property, the cooperative tenant owners do not own real estate. Instead, they own an interest in a corporation that has only one asset, the building, which is personal property. Operation and management of a co-op. The operation and management of a cooperative are determined by the corporation's bylaws. Through their control of the corporation, the shareholders of a cooperative control the property and its operation. They elect officers and directors who are responsible for operating the corporation and its real estate assets. Individual shareholders are obligated to abide by the corporation's bylaws. An important issue in most cooperatives is the method by which shares in the corporation may be transferred to new owners. The bylaws may require that the board of directors approve any prospective shareholders. In some cooperatives, a tenant owner must sell the stock back to the corporation at the original